Welcome to Season 4 of Marcus Oldham Ag Talk, the podcast where we dive deep into the world of agriculture. Stories to challenge your views, expert insights, and the latest thinking that relates to ag. Hosted by David Cornish, we're thrilled to guide you through the dynamic and ever-evolving landscape of agriculture. So buckle up and get ready for another season of Ag Talk. Whether you're a seasoned ag industry pro, a current student, or simply someone who's passionate about agriculture, there's something here for you. Our guests are industry thought leaders, farmers, researchers, and entrepreneurs who are making a difference in the ag world, one innovation at a time. Season 4 of Marcus Oldham Ag Talk's our best one yet, and we can't wait to have you on board. Thanks for tuning in, and let's get ready to explore the wonderful world of agriculture together.
It's great to have Dr. Nikki Sweeney to the Ag Talk podcast today. Welcome, Nikki.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
I was lucky to be able to listen to Nikki's presentation to the lecturers at Marcus on the very question that we're going to discuss today, being the question of AI and its value to people. In that case, involved in education. But me being me, thought, well, if it's good enough for education, surely this is something that agribusiness should also be speaking. So I thought it would be really great, Nikki, to talk about what this AI thing is and think about how we actually might be using it from an agribusiness perspective. Before we do, I think it'd be really good to get some background on you and how you ended up in this space.
Yeah, sure. Yes, thank you so much for having me. And as you mentioned, we met through doing some AI work with the teaching staff down at Marcus Oldham, which was a fantastic joy. My background is a little bit related to agriculture. I did my studies in zoology and ecology, and then I did a PhD in conservation ecology, specifically looking at butterflies on agricultural land, actually, and in pine plantations down in New South Wales. And then, gosh, I started teaching during my PhD. So this is going back 15 years ago now, and just fell in love with teaching. I come from a bit of a family of teachers, so it always kind of seemed like a great place to land. I was always sold as a fantastic lifestyle and a worthwhile cause. Luckily enough, it was sold that way to me. So yeah, fell in love with higher ed, and then on the side, started to be a consultant in data analysis, and actually moved into data analysis for social research predominantly. But, you know, if you've got butterflies on paper and they're all numbers, it's the same thing when you apply it to people. So I worked for places like, you know, the US government, for the UN, for the Australian government, AusAid, CSIRO, big engineering companies on various social research projects, advising them on a research design and data analysis and doing their coding for them and reporting, and then always continued teaching. So that kind of brought me to the point where when ChatGPT came out, I had a background in coding, programming, and then also with the teaching and learning lens. And straight away I thought, my gosh, this is really going to change teaching and learning, right? Like, this is going to flip everything on its head, and we're really going to have to wrap our heads around this as educators. And I also had that kind of, I don't know about you, but that existential crisis moment where you're like, what is the point of humanity anymore? So, you know, I went through it all. And then I got to the point where I went, right, I really want to empower people with this because I know it's going to change the landscape as we know it. So I wrote an article about it, I think, in January. I was invited to a roundtable, and that kind of launched off this business now, where I go and I talk to private and public industries and businesses and organizations about AI, what AI tools are useful to the particulars of their business and their style of work, how they can integrate it, how to use them, and the opportunities and challenges. The other part of my work is I see a big responsibility to use it in ethical ways, because we are at this juncture where AI could really go either way, right? Like, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. There's some scary possibilities with AI. I see it as part of my work to teach people how to engage with it in a safe way, in an ethical way. And that's why I love involving groups of people that may not always use AI. So, you know, groups of women, minority groups, people with different cultural backgrounds, English as a second language, groups like farmers, people in rural areas. I come from a regional town myself, and I'm really passionate about getting those people involved with AI, because it's really important that everybody's voice is heard in this space so that we ensure that AI goes in a positive direction and not the doom of humanity.
Well, that's why they don't let me near it anyway, but that's, moral compass I need to work on. So let's talk about AI. And for us out there who, what is AI? And especially in this specific, because when we talk about AI, we think about, actually, I saw, watching on the weekend, Space Odyssey 2001 or 2002, which is, I've never seen it before. It's the weirdest movie I've ever seen. But you know, for most of us, HAL was what AI was all about. But what is AI and why should people involved in agribusiness be interested in it?
Yeah, look, AI is not new. So like you said, it's been around for a while. If you think about, you know, even the ways that Netflix knows what shows to suggest to us, that's artificial intelligence. So it's been around for a long time. The reason why we're all kind of in a fluster about it right now is that we have these big AI models that have been released that are very user-friendly. So previously what artificial intelligence was, and I'll explain that next, but what artificial intelligence was really in the domain of people that were in programming and could understand the code and set these models up. And then, yes, they might stick an interface on it where we have a very kind of niche use for it, i.e. suggesting a show on Netflix. Now we've got these AI models that actually don't have a predefined use. So the really kind of interesting thing about, say, when they went and sought funding for Google, when they did that pitch, they knew that it was going to be used as a search engine and they knew the sort of capacity of that tool. When the founders of OpenAI, so they're the people who own ChatGPT, when they went out and sought funding, they didn't actually know what the purpose of it was. They just thought this might be kind of cool. So that's why we're all kind of in a fluster about it right now, because we have these huge, huge tools that are trained on heaps and heaps of data that actually don't have a predefined use. It's kind of up to human creativity to push them in whatever direction they're going to go. So that's massive potential. So that's one reason why we all care about it now. In terms of what it is, AI is a way of training models to mimic human thought and human processes. So if we think about a large language model like ChatGPT, have you got kids, David?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's think about a baby. So I've got kids too. I mean, most people out there will have interacted with a baby, whether you have them as your own or not. But think about a baby. If you've got a pet dog at home, right? Every time you go past the dog with a baby, you go, "Oh, look, there's the puppy," or like, "Pat the puppy. Let's be nice to the puppy. There's the doggy." Goes woof woof. Like you go like, "Throw it a ball." And so through that repetitive behavior, the baby then learns that when I see something that looks like this and is shaped like this, I'm going to say that it's a dog, because that's what the predictive kind of model I have been trained on.
Yep.
Every time I see this thing, I say it's a dog. And then at some point you go, "Yeah, you're so clever. You said it was a dog. Well done. My baby's a genius." Machine learning is trained in the same way, right? So what they do is they put in heaps and heaps of data. And at the start, they kind of train that when we say these sorts of words together, what we're looking for is this pattern. And then I don't know, when ChatGPT was first released, it's still now, but a little bit less, every time it gave you a response, you could rate it if it was good or bad. So through doing this heaps and heaps of time, and if you think about, so ChatGPT last month had 1.5 billion users.
Yep.
So if you think about every time somebody's putting in data or some text, it's training that model on what response we are looking for. And so it's just a way of models learning how we act and behave and trying their very best to mimic that. And it's like our brains, right? Like our brains look for patterns. That's why it's really hard to kick a habit. So if you wake up every morning, have a coffee, your brain actually forms funnels in your brain which tell you that, okay, when I wake up in the morning, I go and have a coffee. And then when you try and break that habit, it's really hard. Machine learning is a way of training data to say, hey, when people wake up in the morning, suggest three most common things that they do. And one of them might be coffee, because we've shown them again and again that that's a really regular pattern in human behavior and human language. So machine learning and AI, they work like we are trying to train computer models to be a bit like a baby. And we are slowly getting closer and closer to that place where, a toddler can form sentences. It's got creative ideas. It's recognizing patterns. It's able to preempt what we are looking for from it. And in that way, it appears to think for itself, but it doesn't actually.
So to me, in what you've just said, one of the important things is the ability for this program to actually access significant amounts of data. And so yes. I talk about Google on steroids. How much access does it have? Because if it doesn't have that, then it's only getting a limited view of what a person does in the morning.
Yeah, exactly. So this is a big thing about AI and when we talk about bias associated with AI, which we might go into. But in terms of the data, so again, if we look at something like ChatGPT, so we've got version 3.5 and version 4. So version 4 is the one you pay for. Version 3.5 is trained on about the equivalent of 1.5 million books worth of data. So if you think you go to a library, you grab 1.5 million books off the shelf and you feed all of that information into this model. ChatGPT 4 has about 5 times as much data. And these models are getting bigger. So that they vary. So if you talk about ChatGPT is a large language model. The other popular ones in that sphere are Bard, Claude, and Llama. You can also access all of those tools through things like Perplexity and Poe. I can give you a list if you want to share this
We might put it up on the website.
But they're all just forms of natural language processing models. Yep. So all these models that we think about when everyone's buzzing about AI right now, that's kind of what we're referring to. And they're just trained on huge, huge amounts of data. The thing that we know about data is the more data, the better. So they're trained on big, big chunks of data because we're trying to get stuff that mimics natural human language. That being said, somebody at some point has made a decision about what data is fed into these models and what data is excluded. So that's a really important thing for people to be aware of. And most of these models right now that we are using, they are owned in the US, right? So we've got a very kind of niche geographical area that's making all these decisions and a niche group of people. We're talking Silicon Valley, mostly Caucasian men. We know that over 90% of machine learning algorithms are written by men, predominantly in the US. So it's an important factor to consider that these tools are really impressive. They are not always representative. There's nothing inherently wrong with being a Silicon Valley white guy in the US, but you're going to have a frame of worldview and cultural bias inherent, like we all do, which informs decisions about how you build these models, because they are just built by people at the end of the day.
So do you see that as the main challenge for us to use them is to remember that what is the framework by which they're giving us the answers on and just not to accept the answers? Or is there ways that we can deal with that?
Yeah, look, I mean, when I train people in how to use AI, I think a really fundamental core piece of knowledge is understanding the base principles of whatever model you are using. So not everyone has to know how to write code. When we hop in a car, we don't all know how to put together our own car, but we understand some of the premise around what happens when I put my foot on the accelerator, you know, how does the fuel work? How's the steering wheel connected to the wheels and how does that make the car go in various directions, right? I think the same thing is true of responsible use of AI. I think you need to understand the premise. So when I say that, it's, you know, how much data is it trained on and who built it and who controls it, because that influences how critical you should be with the output. And what I mean by that is in the same way, you know, you said Google on steroids before, we know that we can't Google stuff and take it as gospel, right? Like nothing you get out of the internet can be just taken at face value. Otherwise, we'd all be in a world of pain. So the same thing applies to these large language models. I would say that by and large, they're probably more reliable than just choosing a random website because it's been trained on heaps and heaps of data and not just one website of data. But it is important to always quality control. And that's why when we think about applications of AI, the most powerful way that you could use AI right now is actually within your niche of expertise. So if you are great in agriculture and you have a really deep understanding of a certain type of crop, say, that's where you're going to notice the most amount of help with actually getting AI to work with you. Because we know that data suggests AI uplifts your productivity by about 40%, right? So that's like adding another part-time you to the mix. And where it becomes really a key player is when you can act as that final quality control person. And the space where you can act as a really great quality control person is the space where you know heaps about it. So I always encourage people to first apply AI to subjects they already know a lot about so that they can act as that quality control. And then you can start to play around with sort of other premises and other tasks.
And I want to come back to that because I think that's what got me excited when I started to play around with stuff that I knew, and I was amazed at the answers that came back. But we'll talk about also how you've got to frame the questions or how you can vote. But let's go back again to this term you've thrown out there, ChatGPT. And I've also heard of Bing. So what are they and who are they?
Yeah. So ChatGPT stands for Chat Generative Pre-trained Transformation. So there's other GPTs out there. ChatGPT is just the most famous one right now. And that is a form of large language model. So it's machine learning algorithm. So again, coming back to that baby analogy, it's been trained to kind of respond like a human might when we are learning language. And it's been trained as a natural language processor. So it's a mix between, it tries to preempt what we want from it, and it presents that information in a way that sounds like human language. And so all it is it's a really big data set that looks for patterns. So human brains always look for patterns. Like I said, the baby looking at the dog, it recognizes that it's a dog. So when you put in text, and for people out there that might not have tried any of these platforms, basically they're a website, most of them. There might be an app on your phone. You can open them and there'll be a text box where you write something.
Yep.
And you can write whatever you want in that, and you press enter, and then the model looks at your text and looks at all the data that it's been trained on and tries to preempt how to answer that text. So if I put into it, you know, tell me 5 ways that I can increase my productivity, it scours all the data that it has and it returns the most kind of common values and the common constructs of language to answer that question. And so then the way it answers that question looks really great and fantastic and like, oh, that's, you know, you've solved all my life problems right now. But it's just data, and it's just a machine learning algorithm that's been modeled to look like language.
So for example, chat, as you said, ChatGPT 3.5. So I can Google ChatGPT and I can go online and I can go to, it's called open source, is it? Did you say open?
Open AI.
Open AI, and I can start using that version of ChatGPT tomorrow or today.
Yeah, it's completely free. You need your email to sign up.
Yep.
I guess full disclosure, the other thing to think about, you know, I mentioned about that data security and privacy and understand biases. When you sign up to a free version of AI, you agree that what you put into that AI model can be used to train the next model. So this is something that people sometimes get a bit freaked out about. I want to be clear that they don't take your exact sentences and like steal your identity and then go and give it to somebody else. Like if you put in stuff about, you know, a fantastic idea that you have for a ag tech startup, I can't go onto ChatGPT tomorrow and be like, hey, what did David Cornish write yesterday for his cool idea? Can I please steal his intellectual property? It does mean, though, if you have a conversation about a tech startup and you're saying, great, this is fantastic, give me the next part, outline a way for me to get funding, give me an email to approach, you know, an angel investor, it may use some of that conglomeration of language to train the next model of ChatGPT. So people should be aware of that, but you can absolutely start using it for free you can use it on your mobile as an app, or you can go onto the internet and start using any of those tools I mentioned before. So Perplexity, Poe, Bard, Bing. It sounds like I'm reading out a children's novel that's nonsensical, but there's a bunch of models that all do the same sort of thing, and most of them are free.
So Bing's a search engine, isn't it? Or how have they got into AI?
Yeah, so Bing is a search engine, but they also have an AI component to it. So it actually is like the Google on steroids is the best way to describe it. So when you search for something, it can return a text kind of summary with links to where you'd be finding that information. It's live to the internet. So that's a little bit different to how ChatGPT works. ChatGPT is not live to the internet. It's trained on data up until September 2021. So you can't get kind of a current source for things. The free version is also notorious at giving you hyperlinks that actually lead nowhere. The paid version of ChatGPT has various other bits that make it more reliable in that respect. But yeah, again, coming back to understanding a little bit about the premise of the model that you are using so that you kind of know which one is the best fit.
And I think now let's have a look at using it. Now, I think ChatGPT is a good one to start with because obviously it's free and it's something that I've played around with. And again, my one recommendation to people who might be listening to this is have a go. There's no dumb question. Sure. Just get on and play with it and just see what it does. But one of the things I took away from it was the ability to sit there and ask questions and then look at what comes back and then frame the question again. And you gave us, I think, a really great example about how you deal with ChatGPT, and anyone who's had a 18-year-old, 17 or 18-year-old male child knows exactly what you're talking about. Think about asking this question or getting information from a 17 or 18-year-old male.
Now,
we know that they can take a bit of work to get to the answer. And I think if you take that context or framework into this area, it helps you in achieving your goals. So that'd be a fair surmise of what you were saying, Nikki?
Yeah, I mean, I'd only add to that I feel like ChatGPT is probably more polite than your average 17 or 18-year-old teenager. Well, especially if you're their parent. Like,
I got to tell you, the story is that one of the lecturers took it home and set the computer up on their dining room table at dinner with their 14-year-old son and said, "I want to talk to you as a 14-year-old boy who lives on the south coast of Victoria. I'd like to ask you questions." And the replies they got back was almost a mirror image of the real one.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. What? Whatever. Why are you asking that?
I don't know.
Yeah.
So I would say ChatGPT is more collegial in that manner. It's an eager 17-year-old is how I like to describe it. So yeah, there's a few things again when I talk about how to use these models, because lots of people come into it and try and kind of use it how you might use Google. Like, tell me about X. And that scratches the surface of the possibility, but where you really kind of get the difference is, again, coming back to, it's not actually a search engine. It's made to be like a human. So the best way I can kind of give a lay of the land is talk to it like you were talking to a human. Talk to it like you're engaging a new employee. Maybe like a keen 17-year-old employee, right? So that it doesn't actually know about you or your specific context. So the way I frame it is a kind of three-part process of setting up anything when you first go in there. So if it's first time using it, you think about always giving ChatGPT a role to play. And the reason why I say this, you know, like you said, with the setting it up as a 14-year-old boy, like, that's pretty fun. Role play can be like great for, you know, laughs around the dinner table. But there's a really specific reason why it's powerful to give ChatGPT a role to play. And it comes back to how these models are made. So when I talk about 1.5 million books worth of data, right, we've got billions of parameters built into these models and different decisions that these algorithms have to make when they look at your language. So if I just say something like, can you tell me about crop production, for example, right? It goes and has a look at all the data that it has that kind of mentions that string of words. Now, that's a lot. And just like what we said, you would never just Google something and assume that every website that you get is giving you valid information. When you put in something generic like that, ChatGPT looks at everything that it has. So that includes the gamut of the great stuff, the cream of the crop. Oh, excuse the pun. I'm getting into it already, the ag jokes. The cream of the crop and then the pretty shonky, really generic, non-applicable stuff. Again, remembering the bias towards, it's going to be US focused because that's where these models are made.
Yep.
So when you put in stuff like that, you might get a ho-hum answer. When you give a specific role, like you are a expert in corn production in Southeast Australia, straight away that narrows the field of focus for a model like ChatGPT. It goes and looks for data that applies to that specific role that you have given it. So that's the first part. Give it a role to play, loves it, you get much better answer. Then get really specific about what you want. So think about not just, can you tell me about blah, because it's going to give you a few paragraphs and call it a day. You're going to say something like, you know, I want to know about increasing crop yield between these certain months in this area of Australia, given these sorts of parameters. Or I'm going to give you some information about my last 3 years of crop cycles and my soil moisture levels, and you're going to suggest ways that I could improve my outcomes based on the data that I give you. You're going to get really niche about what you actually want advice or you want it to respond to. So get really specific and then give it the considerations. So tell it about you. Where are you? What do you do? How long have you been doing it for? What are the ways that you've usually been doing it before? What are certain considerations? So, you know, when I use it in my work, there's nuances around IMA, 30-something Australian academic that likes to think that I'm pretty enthusiastic and friendly. I like to be direct and informative, but, you know, not waffle on too much. That stuff that, like, unless you're Kim Kardashian, ChatGPT has no idea who you are and how you behave and what you care about. So you need to establish that early on. Once you've done it once, you continue the conversation. You don't have to keep reminding it who you are. But when you're setting up that initial conversation, get specific. Think about writing. It's almost like writing a little bio on you. Yep. Who are you? Why are you asking questions? What do you need from this thing? And then the last part is once you've done those three things, I always like to tell people that are new to using it, if you don't really know how to set up a prompt, and that's just the word that we use to refer to the text that you give these models. If you don't know how to set up a prompt, ask it to ask you questions. So you finish your little blurb. I want to learn about crop yields and, you know, increasing my productivity between these months. I live in this area of Australia. Can you ask me questions before you answer my query so that you can understand about me and my work and what I want from you? And that way it'll go, great, David, lovely to meet you. Here's 10 extra questions for you so I can really understand you and your business and what you want from me. And then I'll go ahead and answer and give you a really detailed response that addresses what you actually intended me to do.
Yeah, I think what I want to add to that, because people might say, oh, that sounds all very nice in theory, yada, 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 is that I actually did this with our farm operation, which is based in Western Victoria. And I wrote in to the query that it's a prime lamb operation based in Western Victoria. Here is our rainfall. This is when we lamb. Can you write me out a calendar of activities of the key events? And it did that. And it was quite, the first one was, yeah, okay, at a very high level, that makes sense. Oh, yeah, to maximize my profitability.
Yeah.
And for instance, it talked about condition score. Now, obviously, condition score is something important in understanding from a prime lamb perspective. I said, you've mentioned condition score, but what level of condition score do I need to have my ewes at different times of the calendar based on a Western District rainfall pattern that will maximise my profitability? Now, the answer it came out was as good as what I got from actually attending courses such as Lifetime Ewe Management or T90, and had it absolutely nailed it. So that ability to actually think of it as a, I almost say it as a fellow colleague, and I know that sounds weird when we're talking to a computer, but able to ask those questions, really, really helpful. And the other thing that I found really, really good was that I was doing this on my own. I didn't have to ring anyone, and yeah. I didn't have expenses to do or consultants to get hold of. And as long as you've got enough information to keep you out of, you know, the frameworks, and you could just continue to drill down until you got to the data that you wanted. And that was even just on the free one.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, exactly why I'm so passionate and excited about it, I guess. It's because of exactly that. You all of a sudden have access to this huge resource where you don't need extra capital. You don't need to outsource. You don't need to go and have those connections. And like I said, for people that are in a rural, regional, you know, potentially don't have the capital to do that kind of stuff, it's a massive, massive uplift in the sort of information that you have access to. And like you say, because you can role play and because it's right there all the time, you can all of a sudden have a business strategist on hand. You can have a employee onboarder on hand. You can have a customer service program on hand. You can have a environmental advisor on hand, right? You can set up all these specialist characters and you can interact with them whenever you want. And they don't ask for anything.
And again, another, And again, sorry, because it is, I think it's really important for people such as us. Now, some things you might find, like in human resource, quite awkward, like doing job appraisals or writing a letter to someone saying, you know, no, but no thanks, or a letter of dismissal or something like that. And you can go into this and say, either, listen, I need to have this conversation. Can you play that person? And I'm going to ask you some questions, you know, and we're going to go through that, and then it'll come back to you with the type of answers you get, so you get comfortable with. Or it can write the letter and you can go over it. Now, when you do that, what I find, and this is maybe just I've got to get my question right, is that some of the language isn't me. I was going to say sticks out, but I won't finish that term, but it's obvious that it's not you. Be really careful of that and think about, would you use that word?
Yeah, exactly. And this, again, comes down to some of your use around it, because it's trained on lots and lots of data, so it's looking for generalizations. So the language it comes out with is fairly general in nature. Something, if you are going to do communication stuff with it, something that I get people to do is actually put, so copy and paste in a few of your emails or your newsletters or whatever your communication is, and say to ChatGPT, for example, say, I'm going to give you two of my past emails, analyze these for tone, style, voice, and, you know, use of language. And then I'm going to give you a task to write something else, and I want you to replicate my tone and voice and style. And that'll get you much closer to something that sounds like you. And you can even then say, okay, we're going to call this the David Cornish way. And every time I say we're going to write something in the David Cornish way, it'll spit out something that aligns to what you've trained it on. So there's definitely ways to get around it. You still need to check it, but it will get you like 95% of the way there instead of like 70% of the way there.
So just repeating that, tone.
Tone, style of voice. You can ask it to do like grammar and language. I usually just say like, can you analyze this for my style and tone of voice as a basic, and then replicate that in further communication. But you can get super niche with it.
Yeah, and I think that's really important, because, you know, as a farmer, like all small businesses, we're asked to do 100 different roles and play 100 different things, everything. and let's be honest, we're not experts in everything. But
no,
this,
and
this,
like,
provides
this
a coach.
Is the thing. Yeah, exactly. Like, right, like, you have to not only be good at the actual what you do, but you've got to be good, you know, you've got to be an expert in fertilization, soils, crop management, planting, irrigation, weather, people management, systems, processes, policies. The bigger your business gets, the more of that you have to be across as well. And some of that stuff is really systematic. Like, exactly what you might go out there and do in the field, it might be nuanced and it's a special skill set for you. But writing a onboarding, you know, welcome book for a new staff member, or doing a standard operating procedure for managing the computer systems that you have, or processing customer support, or replying to invoices or merchandisers, that stuff is so generic. And this is the stuff that you don't need to, there's no longer a reason for you to kind of, I don't want to say waste, but to use your talent and excellence, like, play to your strengths, do more of what makes you good at what you're already doing, and get AI to be your outsourcing company, right? Feed it these tasks and get it to help you so that you can really concentrate on those things that actually uplift and provide traction in your business.
And I think that's the fun bit, is that I know certainly there are things that I don't like doing at Marcus.
Yeah.
And it has to do with marking and setting up those things. But what I can do, what I found is it actually makes it more enjoyable. It doesn't take away my input.
You feel
input
like you're team working.
Yeah, it's
right?
Actually fun. And again, I'm not the best speller or language communicator, I'll be honest. And you might ask, well, why are you lecturing? But we'll leave that there. But it helps me, you know, I'm dyslexic, and it helps me with those type of things in communicating my processes much better. So, you know, from a person who has language difficulties, let's put it that way, I think it's just language fun, that that it helps you straighten that up so other people can understand it.
Yeah.
I want to go back to something you said, and it was a really important point around about systemization or systemized problems. The reality is, as much as I've tried to get ChatGPT to make coffee for me or shear my sheep or make management decisions for me, it hasn't done it. But what it's doing is taking out what I call systematic process out of my day-to-day life, allowing me to do more management or training or teaching. And I think people are sometimes scared, oh, this is going to replace us. To me, it's almost, and again, I know this sounds weird, but liberating it, that it's actually allowed me to get on and do what I enjoy doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, coming back to why I get excited about it, is it because particularly in the space of, you know, small, medium businesses, it enables you, if you are the person that normally has to do it all, you have to be the magician that is across all these different fields of a company that would normally, you know, potentially have hundreds of employees that do all these sorts of niche things. If you're that person, it enables you to take that step back and stay in your place of power. Yeah. And again, when I talk to small and medium businesses about it, this is the sell for AI, right? Like that it enables you to remain as what should be the CEO. So you have overarching direction, you are driving the end goal, you understand the vision for your business, but you're using these tools to let you get there quicker and to let you get there with less hurdles, because it's learned from humanity mistakes, right? Because it's got all of this data. So it's not just your brain dealing with this decision and weighing up pros and cons. You've got heaps and heaps and heaps of data out there to draw upon and make these informed decisions. So that's a really, really powerful part of it. And yet just it means that you can leverage, like you all of a sudden have a million interns working for you that are 24/7 that you don't need to pay, that can do any task that you can imagine, really. If you can talk about what you would like done, you can definitely get AI to do it.
ChatGPT, the free version, you can tell me that it's data, has data available up to, was it 2021 or?
Yeah, September 2021.
Okay, so if you want to keep, get algorithms and mine databases that have got information beyond that, you need to pay for the
Yeah, look, there's a few options. So you could pay. So the paid version of ChatGPT is $20 a month. So Australian, that works, depends on our exchange rate, about $35 to $40 a month, somewhere in that vicinity. And you can get plugins. So we can think of that a bit like an app that you get onto your phone. It gives ChatGPT an extra functionality. You can get plugins that search the internet for current information. That being said, if you don't want to pay, there are other AI tools that are live to the internet. So Bard, which is Google's version of ChatGPT, B-A-R-D, that's completely free and it's live to the internet. So you can get current information. And then there's a whole bunch of bespoke tools. So, you know, one that I talk about, if you want research on something, so if you want to see what the literature and what scientists are saying about XYZ, there's tools like Elicit and Consensus where you can enter in, I'm wondering about what are the latest mechanisms to, you know, improve soil moisture retention. And you can get AI to search through all this literature and give you a nice little blurb about what the current literature is with links to all of those papers if you're that way inclined to read it. So that there are definitely bespoke tools, but yeah, Bard's a good one if you want to use something that's current.
Yeah, so did you say Consensus?
Consensus and Elicit are pretty good ones, yeah.
Cool. So the value of plugins is obviously if you want to be specific or go down a certain thing.
There's plugins for everything. Like there's plugins for data analysis. So that's another one I love. ChatGPT-4 has Code Interpreter, which if you know about programming, it's actually run on Python, which is just a programming model. But it means that you can talk to your data. So if you've got sensors in your land that measure, you know, sunlight and moisture and various bits and pieces going on in your crops, but you actually have no idea how to interpret that data or what it means, now you can upload your data to these AI tools and you can say, hey, tell me the 5 most interesting things that you see going on with this data. Or can you give me a summary of what's happened in the last 2 years and how that's tracked with weather? Can you predict what is going to happen next year if I only get this much rain versus if I predict this much rain? You can get it to do that kind of stuff for you, without having to know how to do any coding. And again, without outsourcing to a data analyst. So that, I mean, that was my whole gig before, right? Like I get hired by people to understand their numbers. And now you don't have to, which I'm not mad about because I just love that we have equity now. It's no longer, I'm not beholden to the knowledge. Everyone can have access to it.
What was that last, what was the plug-in there for that one?
So that's, if you pay for ChatGPT, it comes with Code Interpreter. You just need to toggle it on in the settings and you'll turn on Code Interpreter and you can upload data sheets and it'll write code for you and you can chat to it like you, yeah, if you were to hire me back in the day, 6 months ago, before ChatGPT, if you were to hire me, we'd sit down, we'd have a conversation. You'd be like, hey, Nikki, I've got all this data. I really want to know X, Y, Z. These are the sorts of decisions that I'm wanting to make. Can you tell me what's interesting about my data and what you're noticing? Yeah, can you tell me if there's anything I should be aware of? And now it can do that for you.
Nikki, as usual, every time I start talking to you, I don't realize where the time goes because I just find it so fascinating. And I really appreciate your time today. Now, if someone wants to get in contact with you after hearing the podcast, how would they go about that?
Yeah, sure. People can reach out to me. I love to talk about AI if you're wondering about tools to use or where to get more information. I also do consultancy work with businesses around picking out AI tools and training staff on how to use them. So whether that's just you and your business or whether you've got more people looking at how we integrate and implement AI tools. But people can get in touch with me on, so they can get in touch with me by email at nikki@aiherway.com.au, or you can look up Dr. Nikki Sweeney on LinkedIn. I'm on there pretty much every single day posting about AI related things. So yeah, always happy to hear about anything that anybody's got going on or questions that they have.
We didn't even get to the point of talking about social media and AI and how it helps. But anyway, that's maybe for another day.
I know. Oh, and then the other thing I did want to say, though, the other big thing is if you've got outward-facing business, now having AI that manages customer service in the way of, you know, chatbots and client management systems, it's all that kind of stuff. Like I said, and like you said, play to your strengths and get AI to do the rest. That's kind of the age that we're at right now. And if you need help, you know where to find me.
Nikki, thank you for that. I know it was the tip of the iceberg, but hopefully that's given people a really good understanding of what AI can do for them and set them on the journey of actually having a go. And just, as I say, it's just go into your favourite web search engine, look for ChatGPT and just start playing. That's, I think, my one word of advice.
Yeah, absolutely. Just dip the toe in. Think about, if you were to hire a new staff member tomorrow, what would you ask them? How would you talk to them? And just start to have that conversation like that and know that it is a conversation. If you enter one thing and you don't like the response, that's not the end of it. You can tell it that you don't like it.
Great, Nikki. Thank you very much for today.
Thanks for listening to this week's Marcus Oldham College Ag Talk podcast. Please, any feedback on the series would be greatly appreciated. You can either leave a message on the site or email me at cornish@marcusoldham.vic.edu.au. Stay tuned as we continue to explore issues affecting Australian agribusiness.